with variable high cloudiness.
And ladies and gentlemen, here we go, here we go. We're ready to go for the second hour here of the French Connection. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. I am your host. And it's a great day for the truth, ladies and gentlemen. We have a problem with our second guest. The commander is not able to make it. He has other engagement that he had previously scheduled, and sadly he couldn't take time away from that, which actually is very disappointing to me. But we're going to go on anyway, because I believe Wayne Kyle has a lot of the facts that we need to share with the listeners anyway. And Wayne, let's go back now to what was happening. You've read his book. You've read the documents. You know the situation. Let's talk about what has been vetted in everyone's mind now. We know a lot of stuff. We had freedom of information out. We've had people speaking out about it. What happened, Wayne?
Yeah. Well, where did we leave off here?
Well, we left off. They're screaming and hollering for help. The planes returned to the aircraft carriers. What's going on over at the Liberty? As far as you know.
Okay. Well, the Liberty managed to get out their distress call during the air attack. The first stage of the attack was carried out by the Mach 2 Dassault Mirage aircraft. The crew members aren't sure how many there were. Some estimates maybe three to a half a dozen, possibly, if that many, half a dozen. But in the confusion and the rain of hell that they were undergoing, you know, with cannon fire and armor-piercing rockets, it was really hard to tell, because most of the time they were undercover. And these rockets were piercing bulkheads and going through decks, and you know what that's like aboard ship. I mean, you think you got some protection from the steel, but you don't.
You don't, no. No, not unless you're in an area of double plating, and that's not very, most of the ship has no double plating.
Yeah, they weren't below the waterline on the battleship.
That's right.
So these rockets were going through the ship in some instances, and so the second stage of the attack was carried out by Mystere, slower attack bombers carrying napalm, and some descriptions say fragmentary or anti-personnel bombs or whatever. I mean, they really did a job on the ship. They used napalm. The napalm was very effective in that after the initial attacks by the Dassault Mirages, which were very fast aircraft, and the machine gunners, by the way, on the Liberty didn't have a chance. They were shot to pieces. You can see some of the photographs where 8 and 10 inch rockets went right through a gun tub where one of these machine guns were, and the man was killed instantly at his battle station. The napalm was very effective. This is a very well planned attack. The napalm, when it was dropped by the slower attack aircraft and the steers, sloshed through the holes that were punched in the ship by the rockets. So the ship was on fire, both externally and inside the areas of the bridge and the superstructure. There was damage to a gasoline canister that held, fuel for the captain's gig.
Yep.
And there was basically the whole superstructure was a flame. You can see photographs and some of the books where the bridge is just punctured with these big holes.
Now the sailors on board, of course, most of them are locked there in watertight integrity. They're not even aware of what's happening topside. They're probably just hearing things. And then there are people in some small emplacements. You said 50 cals. Were they ever able to strike any of these aircraft?
I don't think they had a chance to get a shot off. These aircraft were very effective. When they made their initial run, Lieutenant Ennis was on the bridge. He was observing them through binoculars, and they passed down one side of the ship. I would guess maybe the starboard side.
Yeah.
And went way ahead of the ship, and then made a turn and came in a direct run right at the ship, right down the center line of the ship. And Jim Ennis described seeing the orange flashes under the wings. And just couldn't believe it, that this was happening. And before he knew it, all he felt was heat and intense heat and explosions around him. And the bridge was just shattered.
Well, now, so apparently it wasn't as effective as they had planned. I mean, what got them to call off the continued assault?
Well, the assault, basically, if you look at the whole picture, the assault from the way Jim describes it in his book came in three stages. First, the air attack, which lasted for approximately a half hour. When the air attack broke off, I guess they expended their weapons, munitions. The bridge got word from the people that were watching the radar below decks saying that they had three surface targets approaching them at high speed at approximately 30 knots.
So they had gunboats coming then?
And they were high speed or Israeli motor torpedo boats. And the aircraft and the motor torpedo boats came from the northeast in the direction of Ashdod, you know, which was one of the ports of Israel.
So again, we had Israeli planes. These Mirage were Israeli. They were. Was that part of their air structure at the time, Mirage, or did they hadn't exclusively bought American products at that time, had they?
No, they hadn't. In fact, that's an interesting question that you asked, because there's something that sticks in my memory, Darrell, about when we were transiting the Atlantic and coming into the Mediterranean. I think it was either before we made our first Liberty port or just afterward that we stopped at the island of Crete, and it seemed like we offloaded some A4s that were in plain gray wrappers. You know what I mean? They were like sealed to the weather.
Yep.
No markings on them. And
yep.
Unless this was a figment of my imagination or a bad dream I had, this actually took place. But I looked through some of my color slides that I took as a photo bug, you know, when I was over there, and I couldn't see anything in that. So I'm trying to contact other crewmen. And if any crewmen that were on the America in the air wing know of this, I'd like to get together with you guys and talk about it and see if we can confirm this. That we
you may have offloaded the bloody aircraft that actually attacked you.
Pardon me?
You might have been offloading an aircraft that actually attacked your own, our own ship.
Well, that's not likely, because the guys on the bridge, they knew what kind of aircraft were, you know, they could identify them. They were like the, you know, like I said, they were the French Mystère and the French Dassault Mirage.
Well, the Mirage was one of the best aircraft on Earth at the time.
It was a Mach 2. It was equivalent to our F-4 Phantom.
Well, and you know, as much as the Americans think that their technology was always the best, the French certainly have kept up with everyone in the world. In fact, haven't they?
I think the Dassault Mirage was like the mainstay of the Israeli attack fighter aircraft. You know, it was used in the attacks on the on Egypt in the first day of the attacks, when they decimated Egypt's air forces on the ground.
Well, now so now we've got how are they weathering this kind of assault? Now we've got the torpedo boats coming in. What did they do? They unload their torpedoes into the side of the ship.
They fired anywhere from 3 to 5 or 6 torpedoes. Descriptions from people that were on deck said one of the guys, I think it was Phil Turney, said he watched one pass right underneath the bow, expecting it to hit, but it passed right underneath the bow of the Liberty as he was standing up in the forward section of the ship, you know, on the forecastle.
Yeah.
As a forecastle, as they call it.
Well.
And then some passed to the rear, and one hit directly amidships on the starboard side in the middle of the ship and exploded. It just happened to be, I don't know whether they knew it or whether probably the Israelis knew exactly where the intelligence spaces were, and that one exploded. It just happened to explode in the intelligence space, and it killed another.
When we come back, we're going to continue this story, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go anywhere. We're back. We're plumbing today. We're plumbing the depths of depravity within the highest ranks of our government, and we are absolutely, without a doubt, showing the criminality involved in the Israeli government. And I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, is this an ally? I have to ask this question. Not an ally, as far as I'm concerned. This country is not an ally of the United States. Never has been. And the facts are there are other things we could discuss about what these people have done. But today we're on the Liberty, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this one of these torpedoes hits amidships right in the intelligence area. What happened to the boat? I mean, you know, the ship was struck. It was probably taken on water, but of course everybody's in general quarters, so we've got watertight integrity. It didn't sink. Why did the attacks get called off, as far as you know?
Well, that's further on into the attack. Let's see here. First of all, when the Liberty was able to get their distress call out in during the air attack, the carrier Saratoga launched aircraft in response. The White House, when they found out that aircraft were launched, ordered them recalled. The people on the Liberty say that if those aircraft hadn't been recalled, their simple presence in the vicinity of the Liberty, making themselves known to the Israeli attacking forces, probably would have prevented the torpedo attack and could have saved an additional 25 lives of the men that were killed below decks in that torpedo attack. There had already been nine or ten of them killed above decks.
Yep.
And this is when the off-duty crew members were laying on their beach towels. You know,
what they have, 140 on that ship, 120? What was the ship's company?
295, 294.
Wow, okay. What do we got, a 395-foot ship?
I forget the exact specifications of it, but it was much larger than the ship that the Israelis said they mistook it for, this Egyptian tramp steamer that carried horses at one time and some troops. You know, it was only a fraction of the size, very small, and the Liberty was just bristling with antennas. Some people described it as like a lobster, you know, with its antennas and
yeah. Well, not only that, if it's flying the colors and on the midmast, it's definitely pretty clear what they're doing.
Not only that, Daryl, but you know that the big white letters and numerals that are painted on the bow, the letters are like, what are they, they're 5 feet high, and the numerals on the bow, you know, painted against navy gray are 10 feet high.
That's right.
Unmistakable. It's not Arabic script. Arabic script, not, you know, numerals like we use.
That's right.
And plus we had the flag flying, and after the air attack, of course, when the flag was so badly damaged and burned and darkened by soot from the smoke, the captain ordered the holiday colors sent up, you know. So they went into one of the signalmen, I guess, Phil Turney, went into the storage place where they kept the flag stored and pulled out the holiday colors, which was what, 9 by 13 feet, and
yep.
They hoisted it up, and the motor torpedo boats continued their attack. After they fired their torpedoes, they circled the ship cowboy and Indian style, you know, like wagon trains, and continued to pump 40-millimeter cannon rounds into it, hoping to explode the boiler in the engine compartment.
Well, we're a 600 PSI main steam, right?
Well, you'd know more about that than I would. I was an electronics tech.
Well, I know they didn't use very many gas turbines at that time, and I think we're probably twin plant 600 PSI.
A lot of hot water and steam in those boilers.
You bet. Superheated 600 PSI. The fact is, those ships are designed to handle an awful lot of damage, and everything, for the listeners, everything on board a military vehicle is double. Every boiler, we've got two boilers, we've got two main turbines, we've got two engine rooms,
mm-hmm.
We've got two of everything because it is a ship of war, and it needs to have its dexterity. So the fact is, it's very hard to put one of these down without really getting it just right. And so now, what happens? They call off the attack, and what's next?
Oh, actually, they hadn't called off the attack. When the motor torpedo boats fired their torpedoes, they continued to circle the ship and fired at firefighting crews that were fighting fires on the decks of the Liberty. They fired at stretcher bearers. They even fired at the life raft when the captain of the ship, Captain McGonagall, gave the order to prepare to abandon ship. They brought the wounded up from the spaces below. They had been using the enlisted mess decks area as a treatment area for all the wounded, and so they started bringing up the wounded from below to prepare them to evacuate the ship. And so the life rafts were put over the side, and according to the guys that were on deck that were able to get their heads out far enough to see, you know, he said the Israelis shot up their life rafts. So that to them indicated that their attackers intended for there to be no survivors.
That's right.
This is like Nazi U-boat commanders firing at survivors of ships that they had torpedoed in the waters, and that's against the Geneva Convention.
We're talking about some of the worst criminals on our planet, and they still are doing that. They murdered our 9/11 people in those buildings as well, and we'll talk about that privately as well as on the air some other time, Wayne. But okay, so what else happened? What happened next?
After the motor torpedo boats had, they came in close enough. One of the torpedo boats came in close enough that a crewman actually stood up on the bow of the boat with a boat hook and fished one of the Liberty's inflatable life rafts out of the water and hauled it aboard, and then the torpedo boats left the scene. A little while later, they were approached by two large troop-carrying helicopters, assault helicopters, that were loaded with fully armed assault troops.
Mm-hmm.
And the captain gave the order to the crew members to prepare to repel boarders, just like in the old days, you know, when they built sailing ships.
They opened up the armory and got small arms out.
Yes, I think they did, and they were prepared to fight these guys off. They looked at them as coming in to finish the job, storm the ship, machine gun the survivors, and plant C4 charges on board and put them down.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They sort of feigned assistance, you know, hanging around up, standing off to the side of the ship, forward of the bridge, and they knew because they were monitoring Sixth Fleet radio traffic that rescue aircraft were on the way or were supposedly on their way. Had they known they were recalled, they probably would have finished the job, and this whole thing would have had a different turnout.
Yep.
We may have been involved in a war. In fact, some guys today think that the Liberty and her crew were sacrificial pigs to start World War III or a limited nuclear shootout with the Soviets and give them a good bloody nose over the Mideast, you know, and point out to them that this is still an American lake and you guys can butt out. In fact, that's what we used to call the Mediterranean. We referred to as an American lake.
Well, you know, I've cruised the Med, and I got to be honest with you. I am ashamed to think that our military and politicians would have treasonously murdered our sailors like that. But it's not surprising knowing what we know about Roosevelt and others. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about the end of that assault and what Wayne knows about the aftermath. And ladies and gentlemen, Daryl Bradford Smith, French Connection. I am coming to you live and direct from central France. We've been speaking with Wayne Kyle here, a sailor on the USS America in 1967. He was one of the many sailors that were, part of history here. And here's the history that I see it. We were viciously and intentionally attacked by Israel in 1967 in a pretext to start a war where we would use our navy and our military to attack Egypt, who was at the time a Soviet state, a satellite. And in fact, our own government committed a terrible act of treason by not allowing aid to go to the sailors of the USS Liberty. We had many lost lives, and many people still today are alive with lifetime injuries. And I know well what that is all about, ladies and gentlemen, because I've lived my whole life with military injuries, and I got news for you. It is not a picnic, and here's the truth. Those folks only broke off their attack, Wayne, if I'm getting this right, because they were believing that that aid and assistance was on its way.
Yes, that appears to be what happened at that time. That fortunately, aid never showed up. These men were left to founder in the water. They didn't even get a cursory flyover by a single aircraft to see if they were afloat or what the condition was. They never saw a single another American ship or plane until the next day, 17 hours later. That was when the America, a couple of destroyers, and the cruiser Little Rock rendezvoused with the Liberty after we steamed overnight to their location. But we couldn't seem to get an aircraft to them to even ascertain whether they were still afloat.
Now, was there a hush order placed on this information? Did admirals come out and people come out and say that you are not to report this?
Well, at the time, I don't know about that. As far as I could see, the cover up as we refer to it as, kind of started when they started bringing the surviving crew members aboard the America to our large sickbay facilities. They heloed the wounded and the dead over to our ship. They brought aboard about 9 or 10 body bags. They were put on the flight deck and lowered down in the weapons elevators, and along with the wounded. By the way, I have I've got a cruise book. I think you know what that is.
Yeah.
This is antique red leatherette, gold embossed, hardbound book. It's about 350 pages.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of it is this event. It's also got pictures of all the news people that we had on board. Bill Gill of ABC, Bob Gorowski, NBC, sound crew, Alan Blanchard of the Detroit News, Bob Horton of Associated Press. We even had Colin Lawson of the London Daily Express.
And every one of them remained silent after the fact.
I don't know about that, but it's hard to get a hold of these people after so many years. I've still been trying to get a hold of one person in particular, because he got this nickname, the Atom Bomb Man, and this is according to Jim Ennis. Jim Ennis told me, he said, you know, you had a guy on board from United Press International. His name was Harry Stathos. And he said he got this nickname, the Atom Bomb Man. He said, would you like to know how he did that? And I said, yeah. He said, well, a year and a half before the America was attacked, he was in Palomares, Spain, when the U.S. B-52 dropped his bomb load, and one of them landed in the ocean, the rest of them broke open on solid ground, and they were looking for those bombs. And Harry Stathos was there to cover that incident, and from there he went to the America. So Harry Stathos may well have seen the launching of nuclear-armed aircraft from the America before he was rounded up along with the rest of the news people and locked up.
Yep, yep.
Because, you know, these guys are all over the ship, and they got a you know, the master of arms. You can almost imagine the master of arms force and the Marines around going all over the planet trying to locate them, find out where they're at before they see something that they ain't supposed to.
Well, you know, the Marines never came in the A-gang area. Trust me, know what we used to do for fun? We used to go up to the flight deck when they were running and throw eggs at the Marines because we didn't like them. Because they ran the brig, and when we came back on Liberty, they beat the tar out of us.
Right.
So that was back in the day.
You know,
ladies and gentlemen, I'm already 50 years old, so I mean, this was back when I was young. But Wayne,
young.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, they've sunk our namesake. They did this, I think, as an indication to the world that we are going down. Well, we're not going to let that happen, are we, Wayne?
Well, I certainly hope not. I'm trying to keep this story alive.
It's not going to die, and you trust me on that. This thing is going to get legs like you don't have any idea, because I don't let things go down. It's gonna grow new legs, and you're going to get a newfound power across our nation, because I believe, in my heart of hearts, that the country of Israel is our enemy, not our friend. And in fact, there are other acts that they have committed against us, including the USS Cole. And they are involved in that up to their eyeballs with the Mossad. And the fact is that many of our boys who've been blown up with roadside bombs over in Iraq have been done by Mossad-influenced bombings. So the facts are, and we're going to bring these things out as well, none of this stuff is secret anymore, and the American public are going to learn everything about this stuff. Fact is, when we finally do get the commander on, he's going to actually add more color to this story, because it's not going to drop here.
Daryl, how much time we got?
Well, we got some time. Well, what do you want to say?
Oh, well, I can cover lots of stuff here yet. After they brought the wounded aboard, and some of them were treated initially,
yep.
They had a memorial service on the flight deck of the America on June 10th,
yep.
2 days later. And the chaplain was up there. They had a Marine Honor Guard. The Marines fired the salute, you know, to the guys of Liberty, and it's all pictured here in my book.
Yep.
Captain McGonagall of the USS Liberty, His Medal of Honor citation is the only one in the history of the Medal of Honor of the United States not to have the attacking forces named. So I guess we're supposed to assume that these were aliens, you know?
Well, you know, people who believe in aliens don't listen to this show because I have told them we don't want you. Just kidding. Anyway, listen, here's the thing. Now, this whole situation has been swept under the rug. I understand that there were some admirals that came down and told people that were principal in this knowledge to keep their mouths shut under National Security Act type stuff. Is that true as far as you know?
I would imagine that kind of thing happened. I can't. I've read so much stuff, and I just couldn't like reiterate to you, you know. But it's out there. There's been an effort to, and in fact, these men were all threatened. I told Jim. He asked me what I heard aboard the America, and I said, well, I said I got the impression that the cover up, if it didn't start, you know, before you guys left the Liberty to come to the America for medical treatment, it started on the America because the captain came over the 1MC and told basically everybody on the America to steer clear of the Liberty crewmen, that they've gone undergone a traumatic event, and not to bother them or ask them any questions. So,
when we come back, we're going to talk about John McCain Sr. having sent down an order that we know about today about keeping quiet. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, more from Wayne Kyle and the Liberty Incident. And ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We're back with another segment with my guest today. His name is Wayne Kyle. He was a sailor on board the USS America the day that Israel went to war with America. And I believe we're still in a state of war with this country. The fact is, we have a caller, Wayne, we're going to take, if that's okay with you.
Great.
Mike from Arizona, you're on, my friend.
Yeah, hi, Daryl.
Hi.
See how long my voice holds out. Just a comment. You'd mentioned or referred to Egypt as a client state of Russia.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm about the same age as you, a few years older. But I remember those years when we were all conned with the notion that the Arab states were pawns in the hands of the Soviet Union.
Right.
And basically they were just kind of satellites of communist Russia. In fact, it was just the opposite.
That's right.
You know, Israel from its earliest days had the Meyer-Kaganovich Pact. My ear, I should pronounce it, as in gold in my ear, Kaganovich, that was Stalin's writing a man. And, basically that ensured that, Russia, the use of Israel, the use of their bases, that they would share intelligence, that the official Communist Party would be allowed to operate within Israel. And, so these people were, from the earliest days, thick as thieves.
Yeah,
and the Soviet Union basically just these people were the pawns of the Zionists/Bolsheviks. I mean, it's two arms of the same operation.
That's right.
You know, the Soviets would provide just enough weapons to the poor hapless Arabs that they could get themselves in trouble, but never win a war with Israel or with any country with first rate armament.
Well, we need no more evidence than to know that Rockefeller and the rest of the Goldmans and Kahn and the rest in the United States were sending Armand Hammer over to Russia regularly as a courier for the political activities. We were not enemies with Russia at the time. We were running this Hegelian dialectic. And we were just—it was just a bunch of malarkey from start to finish.
Yeah, and you know, when I talked to my Democrat friends who assure me that Al Gore or John Kerry would have made things entirely different in this country, I point out to them that you know, Arm and Hammer provided I think it was a zinc mine to Al Gore Senior and Junior, so that he's got. You know, big royalties coming from this operation. Al Gore Sr., when he lost his job because he spoke out against the Vietnam War, he suddenly found himself a vice president in Occidental, or one of Occidental Petroleum's subsidiaries. This is a man who was an elementary school teacher, and he had about as much education, you know, as much attitude. aptitude or training for a position like that as a janitor, a school janitor. So I mean, this is the way these people operate. I mean, they when you serve them well, you end up in a plum job out in the corporate world, making all kinds of money with little or no responsibility.
Well, you know something, Mike? Have you been listening to this Liberty event today?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
What you got a question for my guest, Wayne?
Well, I wonder how Wayne was a communications guy, right?
Electronics tech, right?
I was just electronics tech, black box tech, on the air wing.
Yeah.
How was this order conveyed from Johnson and or McNamara down to Tully? How was this conveyed without the Israelis knowing about it? In other words, they backed off their attack, thinking that the American planes were on the way. How is it that they didn't have access to that information that they've been ordered off?
Wayne? That the Liberties didn't have access to it?
Right.
No, but he's asking how come the Israelis didn't realize that there was no help coming. I mean, the Israelis, why didn't they finish the job? They should have known that the President of the United States stopped the help from coming.
They would have boarded the ship, except that they thought that aircraft were on their way.
Right.
Yeah,
as I explained.
That's the point of my question. How is it that they weren't in the loop to know that the American jets were ordered back? I mean, who do you think really initiated this little plot to embroil America in the Israeli Arab war? Was it Israel or was it Johnson and company?
God, you know, that's a really good question. From what I have seen, I question everything anymore. I'll never forget the day when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. My dad was in the Air Force, and he called us and let us know what was going on, that they were on alert, and it's really hard to say. It's a good possibility that, it's like one sailor suspects that, and many more saying that this was an opportunity for us to have a shootout with the Soviets in the Eastern Mediterranean, a limited nuclear shootout.
Yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, when we come, Mike, you can hang over if you like. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna finish up the show here with a couple of more questions from my guest and from my caller.
Scotch and soda. But in your eye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're not going to take any more music. We're going to go right in back into my caller and my guest, Wayne Kyle and Mike from Arizona. You know, Mike, you got another question for Wayne, because, you know, here's the thing. I'm declaring Israel an enemy state to the United States, and they have been for my whole life. And the simple fact is, today the truth is out, and we know they're the enemy of the United States. They're not in our best interest, and in fact, if we don't recognize them as the enemy they are, our country is going to die at the hands of these people. And I believe that with all my heart, and I'm not saying this anti-Semitically, because I don't think all Jews are involved in this, but I am going to tell you right now that the nation of Israel and the people who support it want America to die, and they want to take over our nation, and those are facts.
Yeah, it's really a shame, Daryl, that the American public is so bamboozled that they've got us thinking that up is down and black is white. I mean, they actually have us, so terrified of Arabs and people from, non-Israeli Middle East, that we cheer Israel, which is the worst parasite that any country can imagine. And like you, I acknowledge that probably half of the Israeli citizens, want no part of the what's being done to the Palestinians and what's being done in their name.
That's right.
But we can't, we have to deal with the government that they have.
Well, it's not just the government; it's the people, the Goldman family, the Kahn family. It's the Rothschilds, it's the Warburgs, it's the Tissons, on and on and on. It's the Sheafs. We can go on and on about who's putting up with this stuff. But it's all about making money and controlling people. And they've done a heck of a job of it over the last 200-300 years, and more principally over the last 40 years. And I'm not taking it anymore, Mike. And I'm not taking it anymore, Wayne. Their days are numbered. Our country's going to rise up, and we are going to take back not only our nation, but the entire world from these criminals. And you, I promise everyone listening to this, my voice right now, this is not empty. I'm telling you, this movement is growing, Michael. You're listening to it every day. You hear what's happening here, don't you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you're speaking the truth. And, you know, a few of us out here recognize it, and fewer still are willing to say amen. I tell you, it's, a few of us have been burned by the pro-Israel set. I mean, they play hardball.
Yeah, well, we do too, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Mike, I got to tell you something. We're not laying down for this anymore. It's time for patriots across the nation to stand up. What do you think of that, Wayne?
I think you're right. No doubt in my mind. I'm glad you're doing it, and I'm glad you're taking an interest in this very important event that not too many people know about.
Well, you know something? It's not just this event. It's all of them, and it's a history. It's a litany, and the facts are, we are fighting back, Michael. We are fighting back, Wayne. The people listening to the show know it, and so do the people on whatreallyhappened.com. These files are going everywhere. 20, 30, 40,000 downloads. They're being shared by file sharing. The country is waking up to just how late an hour it is and how criminal the people running Israel are and have been over since the inception of the country. The war is on, guys. We're fighting it. I need every patriot to stand up and help me fight.
Thanks, Daryl.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Wayne.
I'm still here. Are we finished?
Yeah, we're all done. You give the commander a call and get him squared away with a date for us, and we'll do another show. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tomorrow with Ted Pike, Reverend Ted Pike. We're gonna